Memches Amar Aleph, we're up to the 12th line of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Kra'u Masnisa Misayayale L'Reish Lakish. If you remember yesterday, we spent a lot of time discussing the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish regarding the nature of Ma'us Konos. Rabbi Yochanan was of the opinion that money is a valid kinyan nida oraisa, and Reish Lakish disagreed and said that Mashicha, that you have to actually pull the item to acquire it. So now, the Gemara is going to attempt to bring both a pasuk and a braisa that corroborates Reish Lakish's position. Kra dichsiv, v'chicheish ba'am yiso b'fikadon ovis sumes yad ovigazel O Ashakas Aniso. It's a pasuk at the end of Parshas Vayikra, where the pasuk describes different circumstances in which a person testifies falsely, they swear falsely in court regarding cases that involve either a deposit or a pledge or gizela or oshek, which is another term that basically refers to an employer withholding wages from his employee. So the Gemara now explains some of these phrases. Tsumes yad, amar Rav Chisda, kagon sheyiche lo klila halva aso. Ashak, amar Rav Chisda, kagon sheyiche klila ashko. So two of the examples in the pasuk in Vayikra refer to tsumes yad, which literally refers to a pledge, and oshik, as we just explained, literally means oppression, but it just means when an employer fails to pay his employee his due wages. The Gemara explains that in both of these cases, the party that owes the money, whether it's the lova in the case that he gave a collateral, or it's the employer in the case where he owes the money to his employees, both of them basically took a kli and designated that kli as collateral against the money that they owed, whether it's the loan, whether it's the wages that they owe to the employee. Now the problem is, says the Gemara, the the problem is, if you look a couple of psukim later in that same section in Parshas Vayikra, the pasuk then goes on to specify that in some of these instances that we just mentioned, there will also be a karban asham that a person will have to bring because he swore falsely in Bezdin about whatever the case was. The problem is that the pasuk only refers back to three out of the four cases that it initially mentioned, right? In other words, initially, the pasuk referred to a person who lied in court about either a deposit, a pledge, gizela, or withholding wages, but when the pasuk comes back and specifies the people who are guilty and would have to bring a karban, it mentions gizela, it mentions osa oshek asher ashak, withholding wages from your employees, and it mentions the pikado, the deposit, but that example of tesumes yad, of a pledge, is omitted when the pasuk repeats itself a few psukim later. Why is that? Why is the example of a pledge omitted? So presumably the Gemara says because it's a lacking meshicha, because the malveh never did meshicha on the pledge. And isn't this a proof? The fact that the pasuk doesn't repeat the example of tumas yad would lead us to believe that Reish Lakish is correct, that meshicha is an operative kinyan mida oraisa, and that's the reason why it's not mentioned in the context of being chayav a karban asham, because the malveh never did meshicha on the pledge. So the Gemara says not true. Amar le Rav Papa le Rava. Well, meaning the example of Oshek we just mentioned a second ago in the Gemara is that the employer also puts up collateral, right? In other words, he puts up an item as collateral against the money that he owes to his employees. Now, the Gemara is going to talk about that in a second. The Gemara is going to ask, well, aren't some of these cases included or subsumed under other examples in the pasuk, which may be the reason why Tumas Yad was omitted the second time around. So again, the Gemara says, well, hang on a second. Like Danny just said, the pasuk mentions Oshek a second time. In other words, again, the issue with Tumas Yad, with the pledge, is that it's much more of an abstract debt. It's not a specific item. It's not like a deposit. It's not like collateral where I say, okay, I'm giving you my watch as collateral. That's a specific item. In the case of Oshek, as well as in the case of Tumes Yad, it's a much more abstract debt. So for example, in the case of Oshek, yes, it's true that the employer owes the employee money, but it's not a specific item that he owes him. So one could make the argument, says Rav Papa to Rava, that the fact that the Torah repeats Oshek almost includes the case of Tumes Yad. Tumes Yad, conceptually speaking, is very similar to Oshek, in the sense that it's this more abstract debt as opposed to a specific item. So the Gemara rejects this. The Gemara says, you can argue that the case, the context of Oshek and the Pasuk is the following. Let's say the employer decided, I'm not going to pay money to my employees, I'm going to give them an item that has the same valuation of what I owe them. I'm going to give them, whatever, a $10,000 Rolex watch instead of $10,000. And then the employees say, okay, great, we'll take the watch, not a problem, but we're going away on vacation now, and we don't want to, you know, take our Rolex watch with us overseas, so we want you to watch it for us. So they give the Rolex watch right back to the employer to watch as a show there. So the Gemara says that's the scenario, and then when they come back a few weeks later from vacation, and they say, where's the watch? The guy says, I don't know who you are, or he denies the whole thing. In that context, that's why the Torah felt it prescient to repeat the case of Oshek, because it was specifically a scenario where they received an actual item. So it's no longer an abstract debt. They got an actual item that they then handed back to the employer to watch as a shomer. So the obvious question is, asks the Gemara, Hainu Pikadum. How is that different than the case of Pikadum, the case of a deposit? Seemingly the same thing. So the Gemara says, you're right, Trey Gavne Pikadum. There are two cases of Pikadum mentioned in the Pasuk. Conceptually speaking, there's really no difference between them. There's just two different examples that the Torah mentions. So the Gemara then asks the follow-up question, which is, Ihachi Tzumes Yanami Li Hadre V'Lok Meke Gon Shenatlu Heimenu V'Chazer V'Hiv Kido Etzlo. So the question then is, if we just stuck this Okimta into the Pasuk in Chumash, we said, really, the case is that the employer paid the employees with an item, with a watch, instead of with money, and then they turned around and gave it back to him to watch as a shomer. So the question then is, why can't we make that same Okimta in the context of Tzumes Yad, in the context of a pledge? Why don't we say the same thing? One second. Sorry about that. So the question is, why don't we make that same okimta in the context of Tzumes Yad? In other words, in the case of the pledge. Namely, we should say that the case was that there was initially a pledge. He put up an item as a collateral against the money, and then he turned around, gave him the item, and then he turned around and gave it back to the malve to watch, or I'm sorry, to the lovet to watch as a pikadum. So the Gemara says, no, Ia hadrikra lo tiyufta velo siyata, hashta delo hadrikra misayel. So the Gemara says, you're right, that had the pasuk gone out of its way to repeat the example of Tsumes Yad, so then the pasuk would have been neutral. There wouldn't have been a proof one way or another whether Reish Lakish's position was correct. However, the fact that the pasuk omitted Tsumes Yad when it repeated itself about the people who are chayav to bring a karban asham, that is a clear proof to the position of Reish Lakish that Mashiach, in fact, acquires me to Oraisa. So asks the Gemara, Utsumes Yad lo Ahadrikra. So the Gemara questions the entire premise of this point. We've been assuming until now that according to Reish Lakish. That's Reish Lakish's position. Remember, that was the whole machlokas from yesterday. Rabbi Yochanan says that just paying money, I pay money for an item, I now own the item, Mida Oraisa, and that's it. Reish Lakish disagreed based on Psukim from Parshas Bahar that we discussed yesterday, that he says, no, that Okano Miyad HaMisech, you actually have to physically pull the item. So the Gemara now questions this whole premise where we said that, oh, the case of Tsumes Yad, the case of the pledge was not repeated two Psukim later in Vayikra in the context of being Chayav of Karban Asher. The Gemara says, is that really true? The Hasanya, Amar Reb Shimon, Minayin Lita. If you look at the second to last pasuk in Vayikra, this is also two pasukim later after the pasuk that we just mentioned a second ago, the pasuk says, "O mikol asher yishava alav lasheker." Any context, anything that you swore falsely about, and the Gemara comments that that's kind of a catch-all phrase to refer to all of the instances that were mentioned a couple of pasukim earlier, presumably also referring to the case of Tsumes Yad. So there really is a pasuk that alludes to the case of Tsumes Yad, and therefore that begs the question, why wouldn't you be chayav a karban asham? To which the Gemara says, no, behed yemi aloha hadrikra, because it doesn't mention it explicitly. So in other words, Tsumes Yad is never mentioned explicitly the second time around when the Torah talks about those people who swore falsely and who would therefore be chayav a karban asham. Okay, so this was all the pasuk that supports Reish Lakish's contention that Mashiach acquires me to Oraisa, in contrast to Reb Yochanan, that money acquires. Now the question is, Masnisa Menal. We also mentioned in the Gemara in the beginning that there's a Braisa that also supports Reish Lakish. What's that Braisa? Disanya. Nasna Livalon Mal. V'amar Rav Dafka Balon Hu Delo Mechaz from Mashicha. Avo Midia Harisa De Mechaz from Mashicha Lo Mal Ad Mashich. The Gemara quotes a Braisa that appears in Meseches Me'ilah that makes the following observation. The Braisa says, let's say a person has money that he consecrated to Hekdesh, and he decides to take that money and he pays the bathhouse attendant the money to go and use the bathhouse. The question is, at what point does the person violate Me'ilah? The Braisa says, the minute he hands the money to the bathhouse attendant, that's it. He violates Me'ilah. Now, Rav infers from the Braisa that that's only true specifically in the case of a bathhouse attendant, that you violate Me'ilah the moment you hand that consecrated money over to the bathhouse attendant. But let's say you're dealing with a normal business transaction. You're buying an item from someone. You're buying a car. You're buying a watch. And you hand the money over. So then Rav says, you only violate Me'ilah once you do Mashiach on the item. The only reason why Mashiach doesn't make any sense by a bathhouse bathhouse attendants because you're not acquiring an item from him. You're paying him for the services to use a bathhouse. So that's the only reason why you violate an eel the moment you hand the money to the bathhouse attendant. In contrast, but for a normal business transaction where you're acquiring an actual item, in that scenario, we say that you don't violate me'ila until you do mashicha, which again seems to lend credence to Reish Lakish's position. So asks the Gemara, hang on a second, v'hasanya nasna l'sapar ma'al v'sapar habay l'mimshach tispores. We have another brisa in me'ila that says that if, let's say, for example, you wanted to go to the barber and you wanted to pay the barber for a haircut with consecrated money, with money that was hekdesh, the brisa says that you violate me'ila once you pay him the money. The problem is that you also have to do a mashicha on the haircutting utensils, on the scissors and the shavers and whatever, in other words, in order to finalize the transaction. To which the Gemara says, you're right. Hach b'mayaskina b'sapar nachri delav bar mashicha hu tani nami hachi nasna l'sapar o l'sapan o l'chol bali umnas lomal ad mashach kashin ahadadei el alav shmamina kan b'sapar nachri kan b'sapar Yisrael shmamina. The Gemara says it depends if it's a Jewish barber or a non-Jewish barber. For a Jewish barber, so then the Gemara says that mashicha is the operative kinyan. In other words, you don't violate me'ila for getting a haircut from a Jewish barber by paying him with consecrated money unless you actually did mashicha, unless you actually picked up the scissors, you picked up the shaver, the whatever it is. But for a non-Jewish barber, so mashicha doesn't apply to a non-Jew at all, because the pasuk says, we mentioned yesterday in Parsha Bahar, it says, okano miyara misecha, that it has to be from your colleague, from your friend who's Jewish, so therefore there is no mashicha. So even Reish Lakish will agree that ma'us konos, the money acquires when it comes to a non-Jew, but when it comes to a Jewish barber, so the assumption is that mashicha is going to be the operative kinyan. Then the Gemara says, v'chein amar Rav Nachman
dvar... Why should the barber be any different than a bathhouse?
Because again, because the assumption...
Well, you're getting a service. I mean, why would you think you might
so have that's probably why the Gemara felt the need to specify that in the case of a barber, that you actually have to pick up the items that the barber uses in order to finalize the transaction. Now, again, in theory, you can make that argument by the bathhouse, because maybe you have to pick up the towels or whatever it is. But the assumption seems to be that in the case of the bathhouse, it's not, meaning, in theory, you can go to a bathhouse without requiring any other utensils, right? You can bring your own towel. You don't have to use a towel from the bathhouse. But in the case of a barber, right, there are things that are needed. He has to pick up his tools in order to cut your hair. So the assumption seems to be, again, that seems almost implicit in what the Gemara adds in the case of the barber, that in order to finalize the transaction, you actually have to do a mashicha on the hair cutting utensils. Okay. Then the Gemara says, v'chein amar Rav Nachman dvar Torah ma'us konos uvadka levi b'masnisei va'ashkach nasna lesiton ma'al elakashil Reish Lakish. So now the Gemara points out that Rav Nachman seems to side with Rabbi Yochanan that mida oraisa, it's ma'os konos. Like we quoted yesterday, that money affects an acquisition, that once you pay money for something, that's it. You acquire it even before you do a mashicha. And in fact, the Gemara comments that Levi searched through all of his compendium of brisos, and he found another brisa in Maseches Me'ila that says that if you paid money to a seton is a wholesaler. Let's say, for example, you were trying to buy a very large quantity of grain, of wheat, from a wholesaler, but instead you basically gave him a down payment. He said, I'm going to pay you a little bit of money now. The money you paid him happened to be hekdesh, happened to be consecrated. So the brisa in Me'ila says, once you paid that little sum of money, even though you're planning to buy hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of grain, you only paid him a couple of dollars, you already violated Me'ila. Presumably because this supports Rabbi Yochanan that once you pay the money, even if it's just a small sum, you've already violated Me'ila because that affects an acquisition. So how does Reish Lakish deflect this proof? Amar lecha Reish Lakish, hamari Reb Shimon. Reish Lakish will argue that this brisa in Me'ila conforms to the shita of Reb Shimon that we quoted yesterday, where Reb Shimon told us that lokeach lo matzei hadarbe, that the purchaser does not have the ability to renege or to back out of a transaction. That's the reason why he assumes that you violate Me'ila once you give a little bit of money to the wholesaler. But the Rabbanan, argues Reish Lakish, would disagree with this brisa, and therefore Reish Lakish says, we follow the Rabbanan, and this brisa is shelo kahalach. Okay, then we mentioned in the Mishnah, aval amru mishaparo. We mentioned this idea briefly yesterday, this notion that if a person reneges or backs out of a transaction, they get cursed with what's called a mishapara. Mishapara literally is one who is cursed. It's basically the opposite of a mishaberach, right? So mishapara means if a guy backs out of a deal, so we say he should be cursed. You know, Hashem should rain down curses on him like he did to the Dora Mabel and the Dora Flaga and to the people of Sodom and to the Mitzrim and the Yamsuf, etc. So the Gemara now has a machlokes. What exactly is a mishapara? Itmar. Abaye amar odue modinan le. Rava amar meilat laitinan le. Abaye says that a mishapara is not quite as intense as we made it out to be yesterday. Mishapara basically means that it's a warning. We inform the person. We say, listen, if you go through with this, if you back out of this deal, so then God is going to, again, punish you with all of these things. And Rava says, no, that Amisha part is exactly what we thought it was. It's this very intense, severe type of a curse for a person who's thinking about backing out of this transaction. So the Gemara explains, Abaye Amar Odue Modin Anle, Dichsev, Vinasiva Amecha Lo Sor, Rava Amar Melat Laitin Anle, Dichsev, Ba'amecha, Ba'osev Aisa Amcha. Abaye says that we do not have the authority to actually issue such a curse on a person, meaning we warn him, we inform him, we say, listen, if you go through with this, if you back out of this deal, God is going to do X, Y, and Z to you, but we're not the ones, and we as Bezdin are not the ones who issue such a curse. Why not? Because the Pasuk in Mishpatim tells us, V'nasiva amecha lo sor. There's an Isser in the Torah to curse a Nasi, and the Gemara in a few places interprets that Pasuk not just to refer to a Nasi, but to any Jew. You're not allowed to curse any Jew. So the question is, how does Rava justify this? How does Rava explain why it's okay for Bezdin or for anyone else to curse a person who backs out of a deal? Because Rava, this is also quoted in the Gemara a little bit later, that says that prohibition of not cursing another Jew only applies to a person who's Osem Maisa Amcha. He has to act like a Jew. It's not considered to be a Jewish trait to back out of a deal, to renege on a transaction, and therefore the Israel is not going to apply. Amar Rava Mina Aminala. So Rava says, how do I know that this is true? That we literally administer a curse to a person who backs out of a deal. The Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef, Yohavu Lezuzei Amilcha, Lesofi Yakar Milcha. Where relates the following incident. Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef was selling salt to a bunch of prospective buyers, and he accepted a down payment on the salt. And then what happened was, before the buyers came to pick up the salt, the price of salt had gone up. So now, the amount that they had paid, let's say, initially they paid $500, let's say, and that would have gotten them the entire amount, but now the price of salt doubled, now it was $1,000. So now they wanted to come and collect the full amount of based on what they paid initially. So, basically, Rabbi Yochanan said to Rav Chia Bar Yosef, you better give the buyers the full amount of salt that they initially paid for, and if you don't, then I'm going to curse you with the Mishapara. Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef, Baro Duehu. And if you're going to tell me like Abaye that the Mishapara was merely informing him, if you do this, then we're going to curse you. What, you think Rav Chia Bar Yosef needed a lecture about not, you know, reneging on transactions? To which the Gemara then asks, okay, ve'elamai, mela laitinamai, Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef, ase le kabuli ale latusa derabanan. But then the alternative is even worse. What, you're going to tell me that Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef, we're going to curse him with the curse of the rabbis? That's also, you know, seems to be not feasible. So the Gemara says, you're right, ela Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef, a ravon hu diyave le, hu suffer kenegdo hu kona, ve'amar le Rabbi Yochanan keneged kulo hu kona. The Gemara says that the issue here was, as we alluded to before, that Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef accepted a down payment initially for the salt. And the problem was that initially the down payment was sufficient to cover the full value, but then once the price of salt had gone up, it was no longer enough. So the question basically is, did the buyers acquire the full amount of salt, or only whatever they paid for, whatever was commensurate to the money that they initially shelled out? So in other words, Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef thought they only acquired the amount of salt that they paid for, and Rabbi Yochanan said, no, it's not true. That kineged kulo hu kona, that they acquired the full value. Yes, it's true that they're still going to owe you the remainder, but you have no right to back out of this deal and say, I'm only going to give you half of what you initially paid for. And in fact, the Gemara quotes this as a machlokas. Itmar, a ravon, rav omer keneged hu kona, Rabbi Yochanan omer keneged kula hu kona. This is exactly a machlokas between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. Rav is of the opinion that when you make a down payment on something, you only acquire the item vis-a-vis the amount that you paid. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, a down payment means I acquire the item, but I owe you the money some point down the line. So asks the Gemara Meisve, Hanosin Eravon Lachaveiro, the Amar Lo, Imani Chozerbi Ervoni Macholacha, the Hala Amar Lo, Imani Echzorbi Echbolacha Ervoncha, Niskaimu Hatinaim, Divir Rabbi Yossi, Letame de Amaras Machtakanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Dayo Sheikne Keneged Ervono. The Gemara quotes a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda about the following case. Let's say I want to purchase something from someone else and I give him a down payment for it. So, and each party, the buyer and seller, each make the following stipulation. The buyer says, again, I'm giving a down payment. I'm not paying for the full value of the car. I'm only paying for whatever, for a quarter of the value. And then he says, listen, if I back out and decide that I don't want to go through with this, so I'm going to forfeit the Eravon. I'm going to forfeit the down payment to you, because it's basically a sign that he's so sure that he's going to go through with the sale that he's trying to convince the seller to actually do this. He says, if for some reason I back out, you can keep the down payment. And on the other hand, the seller says basically the opposite. He says that if I decide to back out of this transaction, then I'm going to double the down payment that you paid. I'm going to give you back double what you paid. So Rabbi Yossi says those stipulations are binding. Why are they binding? So Rabbi Yossi has a famous position, some machlokas all throughout Shas, called asmachta kani. We've discussed this in the past. Asmachta is the idea that if a person basically says something where they don't really truly believe that that result is going to happen. So in this context, the guy doesn't believe he's going to back out of the deal. Neither party believes that they're going to back out of the deal. They're both 100% convinced, one that he's going to buy the car, one that he's going to sell the car. And then something crazy happens that prevents that from happening. Rabbi Yossi holds it doesn't make a difference. Whatever you said and whatever exaggerated terminologies you used, that is 100% binding. And again, whichever party backs out is going to have to live up to their word. Either they're going to have to double the down payment or they're going to have to forfeit the down payment. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that it's sufficient to acquire whatever corresponds to the value of the down payment. Meaning to say that whatever it was that he paid, that's what he acquires. That's the value that he gets. And everything else, all the other stipulations are just an asmachta. Rabbi Yehuda obviously holds that asmachta lo kanya. That if you make these exaggerated conditions where you don't really believe that you're going to go through with it, so Rabbi Yehuda holds that that's not binding. However, the Gemara points out, Amar Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Bamed Dvarim Amurim, Bizman She'amar Lo Ervoni Yikon, Ava Machar Lo Ba So Sada be Elef Zuz, Ufara lo mehem Kamesh meo Zuz Kana, Umachzer lo Esashar, Afilu Liacher Kamashadim. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel qualifies this machlokas. He says this idea that the down payment acquires corresponding to whatever amount that you paid is only true if you specifically said at the time that you gave the down payment, Ervoni Yikon. My down payment is going to acquire X amount, whatever amount of the car, the field, whatever it is that you're trying to buy. But let's say, for example, Reuben sells Shimon a house or a field for 1,000 zuz, and Shimon only basically makes a down payment. He pays half the value up front. He only pays 500. So the halacha is that Shimon fully acquires that house or field. Obviously, again, he will have to compensate even many years later. He's going to have to pay the remainder. So the Gemara asks, "My lav hu hadin limitaltalin bidistama kani lehu lechulu." So the Gemara says, presumably, this notion should also carry over to mitaltalin, namely that once you make a down payment, you own the item, and yet. Yes, it's true you have to pay for the remainder, but basically you own the item. To which the Gemara says, "Lo metaltalin b'distama lo kani." The Gemara says, "Not true. That there's a difference between karka and metaltalin in this respect. What's that difference based on? Umayishna karka devechaspa kani le mamish kani le luchula metaltalin de lo kani ela le kabuli mishapara lo kani le kule." The Gemara says that when it comes to karka, when you make a down payment on land, on a house, on a field, you are the owner of that land, house, field 100%, even though you have not fully paid for the land, house, or field. You now own it. Yes, obviously you still have to pay up the rest of your debt, but you basically own it. However, when it comes to metaltalin, that's not the case. As we've already discussed earlier on the staff, when it comes to metaltalin, the notion that the down payment that I gave to acquire your car, your watch, whatever it is, that only has ramifications in terms of accepting the mishapara, that the guy who decides to back out of this transaction is going to be cursed the way that Hashem cursed the Dora Mabel, Dora Flaga, etc. But it doesn't mean that he now fully owns that car. It's just, in other words, the Gemara is basically saying that it's not considered to be a nice thing to do to back out of this deal, but the guy does not own it fully in the context of metallically. He only owns it fully in the case of karka. So the Gemara points out the following: Lema kisanai hamalva es chavero al hamashkon v'nichnasa hashmita afal pisha eno shava ela plag eno mishame divrei Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Rabbi Yehuda hanasi omerim hayamashkon keneged halva aso eno mishame v'im lav mishame. The Gemara quotes a machlokas of the following case. Let's say Reuven lends money to Shimon with a collateral. He insists that Shimon gives him a mashkel, gives him a collateral. And the problem is that Shemitah now enters. Now, usually, Shemitah typically cancels loans. And the Gemara points out in several places that one of the things that makes Shemitah impervious to canceling a loan is if there's a mashkel, is if there's a collateral that backs up the loan, so that Shemitah, generally speaking, will not cancel such a debt. Now, the question is, what happens in this case? So, according to Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, he says, even if the value of the mashkel is only worth half of the loan. So, let's say, for example, Reuven is lending Shimon $10,000. But the mashkel he puts up is only worth $5,000. So according to Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, it doesn't make a difference. Shemitah will not cancel any of the debt. The entire debt is still impervious to cancellation from Shemitah. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, Rebbe disagrees. And he says that the only time that Shemitah will not cancel that debt is if the mashkel is worth the full value of the loan. If it's not, so then Shemitah is going to cancel. So the question is, what does that mean exactly? My eno mishame tika amar rashbak. What did Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel mean when he said that Shemitah will not cancel the loan when there's a mashkel, even if it's not the full value of the loan? So the Gemara explains, Ilema kenegdo, if Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel meant that the mashkel is worth the full value of the debt of the loan, Michlal de Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Savar Lahach Palga Nami Mishamid. So that would imply that Rebbe disagrees and says that Shemitah will cancel even the other half of the loan, even the half that's not backed up by collateral. But then the question is, Ela Mashkel Denuket Lamale. If Shemitah is not going to going to cancel everything, so then why is the guy holding on to the mashkon for? The mashkon is totally useless. The whole point of a mashkon is to basically assure that you're going to get your money back in some form. But if Shemitah cancels the debt with or without the mashkon, according to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, what's the point of holding on to the mashkon? It's not going to get you anything. So the Gemara says, El alav shmaminei, my ena meshamit de ka'amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, ena meshamit b'chulo. Obviously, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel meant to say that Shemitah does not fully cancel the loan when there's a mashkon. Umay meshamit de ka'amar Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, lahach palga de lo nuket alei mashkon. And Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi meant to say that when he says that Shemitah cancels the loan, he meant the half that's not backed up by collateral. Uvehaka meflege. The Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel savar kineged kulo hukone. V'Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi savar kineged hukone. And the Gemara wants to suggest that this machlokas between Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is our machlokas that we already started from Daf Menches. This machlokas between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan about the very nature of a down payment. Is a down payment meant to back up the entire item? Is it acquiring the entire thing, or does it only acquire the part vis-a-vis the amount that you actually paid it in the form of the down payment? To which the Gemara says, "Lo, my inu mishami de ka'amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel lahach palga de nakin alei mashkon." Says the Gemara is not true that when Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said that Shemitah doesn't cancel the loan, he was only referring to the half of the loan that's backed up by a collateral. So the obvious implication is, says the Gemara, "Michlal de Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi savar lahach palga de nakin alei mashkon nami mishami." So what does that mean? That Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi holds that even the half that's backed up by collateral is canceled by Shemitah. That seems to go against everything we know about Hilchos Shemitah, about Shemitah's Ksafim. So the question then is, where's the mashkon did not get lamale? So if the entire loan gets canceled by Shemitah with or without a mashkon, why does Rebbe insist on the mashkon? So the Gemara says, lezichron dvarim bi'alma. The purpose of the mashkon is basically just a reminder. It's basically meant to say that you should remember that there's a concept of paying back debts and paying back loans, even though in this particular instance, Shemitah is in fact going to cancel the debt.